Good evening, everyone. It's my privilege to be back and continuing with this series, Searching for the Truth on Origins. And over the previous eight sessions, we have looked at the creation-evolution controversy, examining the claims of evolution, the claims of creation, looking at the facts, the observable evidence. In this session, we want to move on and look at the impact that evolution has had on society. And particularly in this session, session number 9, we're going to be talking about the impact of evolution in terms of how it has affected the world morally. As we begin, we turn to Ephesians chapter 5, verses 8 to 17. Paul writes, "For you were once darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light, for the fruit of the Spirit is in all goodness, righteousness, and truth, finding out what is acceptable to the Lord. And have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them. For it is shameful even to speak of those things which are done by them in secret. But all things that are exposed are made manifest by the light. For whatever makes manifest is light. Therefore, he says, awake, you who sleep. Arise from the dead, and Christ will give you light. See then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time, because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be unwise, but understand what the will of the Lord is." You see, what we're going to be doing in this presentation is to examine some of the trends, some of the things that are taking place in our world today, and try to understand what is occurring and why it is occurring. And we will be using the Bible as the book that will give us insight and understanding. And as we look at these things that are taking place, make the observation of current events that are occurring in the world today, we're going to be able to observe that human behavior has a lot to do with whether or not we believe in a creator or we don't believe in a creator. You see, according to the scriptures, there are consequences when we reject the overwhelming evidence that God exists. And we will be looking at those consequences. Now, before we begin to look at the impact of evolution on society, I want to do a brief overview. We've had 8 presentations talking about the creation-evolution controversy, the claims of evolution, the claims of creation. But now what we want to do, just in a few minutes, is to look at an overview of the creation-evolution debate, again, to just review. What is it that evolution claims is true? What about creation? Well, we begin where the evolutionists begin, and that is with the origin of the universe, in which it is believed that in the beginning of time there was a minute lump of matter which blew up, and as a result of an explosion of this very condensed lump of matter, we have everything which exists in the universe, the cosmos, the galaxies, our solar system, our planet Earth, and everything on the planet, including you and me. But is this reasonable? Well, here's a fact. We know that explosions produce chaos and disorder, never order. Given time, all systems proceed in a direction from order to disorder. It never happens the other way around. This is a basic law of science. So the very foundational principle of the evolutionary model cannot be substantiated by what we observe. Or another principle of the evolutionary worldview. The claim is that life originated in the distant, unobservable past as a result of non-living materials coming together to formulate life. But has that ever been observed? And the answer is no. It is a fact of science. There is no evidence to show how life can arise from non-life. It has never been observed. All life we've ever observed comes from pre-existing life. This is a law of science. It's called the law of biogenesis. Or we have the concept that evolution promotes, that through time there has been a progression of life from lower to higher, from simple to complex. It's called the Darwinian tree of life. So here on the tree of life, we see this vertical progression that supposedly occurred. But what do we observe? No one has ever found the intermediates between the different kinds of life. Oh yes, we know that life changes, but it changes horizontally, bounded genetically. But horizontal change in no way provides a mechanism for the vertical change that would have had to occur if the Darwinian view is true. It is a fact. Horizontal variation can occur within genetic boundaries, but we do not see the evidence of the fossil record that shows vertical variation of life, as evolution claims. There are no missing links. And then the complexity of life. It is the assumption of the evolutionary perspective that all life can be explained given time and chance. But when we look at the basic unit of life, what do we see? It is impossible to explain. No one has ever observed a protein molecule which has come into existence by process of chance, let alone the organelles which make up cells. So we have another fact. While evolution claims the complexity of life can be explained by gradual minute changes over time, there is no mechanism that can show how the complexity of cells, tissues and organs could evolve by chance and accumulated mistakes. You see, there's some major problems with this worldview. And with regards to the history of life, the claim is that through time, while life has evolved from lower to higher, from simple to complex, from an amoeba to man, hundreds of millions of years of time passed by and layers were laid down gradually. And that we should find a sequence of life showing how this process occurred buried in the layers of the world. But once more, it is a fact that it can be demonstrated that layers of the earth can form quickly and catastrophically. It doesn't require millions of years. And it is another fact that we know that fossils were formed in some way not being formed today, showing rapid burial, which would agree and fit with exactly the biblical claims. That life that was created was destroyed in a worldwide catastrophic event. Worldwide. And then we examine the claims of evolution that man has arisen from brute ape-like creatures. And many of these claims were outright fraudulent, outright hoaxes. But in other cases, wild speculation, as single bones, toe bones, were used to formulate entire creatures. The facts show that man has always been man. That is, the artifacts that have been left to us by ancient civilizations agree exactly with the biblical perspective that man was created and had tremendous abilities and attributes. And when we look at the major accomplishments of the ancient civilizations, the cities that they built, the towers, their ziggurats, their pyramids, their ability to alloy minerals together. What does it say? The biblical creation view can be supported by the evidence. The evidence is overwhelming. But still, the majority of intellectuals worldwide have chosen to discredit creation and accept evolution. Like what we see here on the front cover of this book, The Rise of Life. And we see this progression or change through time. Or here's a book that is put together to challenge young people to think about evolution. In fact, it's called The Story of the Origins of Humankind. It was endorsed by Isaac Asimov, who states, combines good detail with ingenious three-dimensional illustration. it's bound to interest the inquisitive youngster. And when you open the book, well, you see, yes, it is very interesting looking. Volcano pops up, and then this statement. After countless chance encounters between organic molecules, an event created the universe in the depths of the seas about 3,000 or 3,500 million years ago. Groups of organic molecules came together to form living cells. Or another page where we see a brute ape-like creature walking along. And again, the statement that man has evolved. Well, certainly interesting, but is it based on factual information? You see, it is rather clear that evolution is promoted, but there's some real serious questions. Now, what I want to do tonight is to examine the history behind evolution. That is, those who founded the ideas, the founding fathers. And we can only briefly look at some of these. First of all, we begin with the Age of Enlightenment. And we go back to the time of the French Revolution, where a number of individuals who were very vocal in their presentations, making the claim that man was being held back in chains by religion. Perhaps you remember in history about the French Revolution. There was a great attack, of course, against the Bible. Bibles were burned. And the whole idea was promoted. We must throw away superstition and religion and turn to man's ideas. That was the Age of Enlightenment. Well, in Great Britain, there were numerous instigators in the Age of Enlightenment who had a great influence. One of these was a man by the name of Erasmus Darwin. That name should be familiar. It was Charles Darwin's grandfather. Born in 1731, died in 1802. And Erasmus Darwin was a medical doctor. But he had some ideas on the subject of origins. He wrote a book called The Zoonomia, in which he laid out the idea that through time life had progressed from lower to higher. Erasmus Darwin was a religious man. He worshipped the gods Bacchus and Venus. And he seemed to have a personal agenda to attack biblical authority. Well, certainly he was not alone. In fact, he was one of 14 members who formed what was called the Lunar Society. The Lunar Society, which met in Birmingham on the full moon. That was the Monday closest to the full moon, which may give you some insight into some of the spiritual interests that some of these men had. As I mentioned, Erasmus Darwin himself worshipped Bacchus, Venus, interested in Eastern philosophy, Eastern religion. The Lunar Society, again, projected the concept that the biblical view or the origin of man, that sort of was a mythological concept, and what we need to do is rely upon science in order to determine the truth. It's interesting that Erasmus Darwin was one of the members of the Lunar Society, but so was Josiah Wedgwood, which was Darwin's grandfather on his mother's side. Then there is this individual who was very influential, Charles Lyell. Charles Lyell wrote The Principles of Geology that was published in 1830. And by the way, Charles Darwin had this book with him when he went on his journey to the Galapagos. It was Charles Darwin, along with James Hutton, that formulated the geological chart that we looked at earlier, in which they proposed that the Earth's history was very, very old, and over hundreds of millions of years of time, the layers of the Earth were laid down gradually. And it was through these long periods of time that life lived and died and was buried in these layers. But what most people are not aware, Lyell knew exactly what he was doing. He had an agenda. That was, as part of this whole era of the Age of Enlightenment, to cause people to doubt the authenticity of the Bible, particularly the Genesis record. And that can be documented. Charles Darwin once wrote regarding Lyell's agenda, "Lyell is most firmly convinced that he has shaken the faith in the deluge far more efficiently by never having said a word against the Bible than if he'd acted otherwise. I've read lately Morley's Life of Voltaire, and he insists strongly that direct attacks on Christianity produce little permanent effect. Real good seems only to follow the slow and silent side attacks." You see, Lyell's objective was to cause people to question the Bible without attacking the Bible. And the way that he could do that is to present this view that the layers of the earth were laid down not by a great global catastrophic event, but by gradual processes. The theory was called the theory of uniformitarianism, that is, that the present is the key to understanding the past. And that caused people to question what the Bible had said. The creation that had been destroyed by a worldwide flood. You see, Darwin himself then was able to use Lyell's time frame to substantiate the years that would be required for his idea of evolution to have occurred. And that's why reading Lyell's book on the way to the Galapagos Islands was very important in helping him formulate his ideas. Charles Darwin, of course, is often called the father of evolution, but certainly he is only one of numerous contributors. And as we look into his life, in fact, as we read his own testimony of some of the things that he said in the latter parts of his life, we can see that Darwin himself used evolution as a means of explaining away God. Here's his autobiography, the only complete edition. And by the way, it wasn't published until 100 years after his death by the request of his family because of a number of things which he stated. I will quote to you. Darwin describes his journey. He said, "Whilst on board the Beagle, I was quite orthodox, and I remember being heartily laughed at by several of the officers for quoting the Bible as an unanswerable authority on some points of morality." You see, Darwin himself had gone to seminary for 3 years. He believed in God. He believed in the authority of the Scriptures. But then something changed. He continues, "But I had gradually come by this time to see that the Old Testament, from its manifestly false history of the world, with the Tower of Babel, the rainbow as a sign, etc., etc., and from its attributing to God the feelings of a revengeful tyrant, was no more to be trusted than the sacred books of the Hindus, or the beliefs of any barbarian." So you see, he once believed, and then he doubted, and then, well, he was very disgruntled. And then he makes this statement. "Thus disbelief crept over me at a very slow rate, but was at last complete. The rate was so slow that I felt no distress, and have never since doubted even for a single second that my conclusion was correct. I can indeed hardly see how anyone ought to wish Christianity to be true, for if so, the plain language of the text seems to show that the men who do not believe, and this would include my father, brother, and almost all my best friends, will be everlastingly punished. And this is a damnable doctrine." Charles Darwin stated in his own writings that believing in Christianity, which is based on believing in a creator, and believing that man is separated from the creator because of sin, as he describes it, as a damnable doctrine. And you see, for him, evolution was that way he could explain away his accountability to the creator. But what happened in Darwin's life that brought this about? Well, it's interesting, and I picked up this book while I was at Darwin's home, which is now a museum. And it's about his daughter, Annie. And this book tells you what took place. As it reads in the back cover, the story of the personal tragedy that lay behind Darwin's revolutionary understanding of man's place in nature. The author, Randall Keynes, elegantly and convincingly shows how Darwin's mature theory grew out of the interesting, intensely personal pain. His failure to find spiritual comfort after Annie's death strengthened and confirmed his trust in natural laws, evolutionary laws, later called the survival of the fittest. So here it is. You see, this was a turning point in his life when his daughter died. And he was angry. He was bitter. Darwin's theory, of course, has influenced billions of people. He's called the man who has influenced the world. He's called the scholar who has changed human history. And it's really true. Darwin is buried in Westminster Abbey. I have been there. And when you go into the Westminster Abbey, you will note that his grave, well, you can't miss it. You will walk right over top of it. It's right in the central walkway. I asked the guide while I was there, why would Charles Darwin be buried here? He said, I don't understand your question. I said, well, is this a Christian church? The guide said, yes, of course. I said, Charles Darwin was hostile towards Christianity. And I simply explained to him what Darwin had said in his autobiography, that it was a damnable doctrine. He said, well, I can't answer your question, but I tell you there's a place here where there's archives, and you know maybe somebody there will be able to do that. So he directed me to a library where I went and I asked the librarian the same question. Why would Darwin be buried here? And he took me to a shelf and he pulled down a book, and this is what I read. From the book by Ronald Clark, The Survival of Charles Darwin, A Biography of a Man and an Idea, page 197, I quote. Following his death, which occurred April 19, 1882, his family planned to bury him in the cemetery at Down where he lived. But on April 21st, 20 members of Parliament, including Henry Campbell Bannerman, the future Prime Minister of England, wrote the Dean of Westminster, Dr. George Granville Bradley, and stated the following. We hope you will not think we are taking the liberty if we venture to suggest that it would be acceptable to a very large number of our fellow countrymen of all classes and opinions that our illustrious countryman, Mr. Darwin, should be buried in Westminster Abbey. See, he was a very famous person. They wanted him buried there. But it's very clear by his own testimony, he was not a believer. Well, there's some who say on his deathbed he claimed that what he had believed and what he had taught wasn't true. I don't know. I wasn't there. But all I know is that his ideas have been used by many, many people to explain away the Creator. You see, even Christians have been influenced by these concepts that were put forward by Lyell. The concept of the earth being millions and millions of years. And it was during the time, even pre-Darwin, that Hugh Miller came up with what was called the day-age theory. You see, they were looking for some place in the Bible to put the millions and millions of years. So Hugh Miller proposed a day really isn't a day. A day is millions and millions of years. Well, that idea is still widely accepted. And then there was the gap theory that was put forward by Thomas Chalmers, who lived between 1780 and 1847. Another theory in attempting to accommodate the time frame of evolution into the scriptures between Genesis 1 and Genesis chapter 2. They say, well, there was billions of years there, and that's when life lived and died. But the Bible says that death occurred as a result of Adam's sin, not pre-Adamic. These theories are widely upheld today by many Christians, attempting to accommodate the evolutionary ideas time frame into the scriptures. Now, as we mentioned, Darwin is very influential. I'm going to explain to you how influential he was, particularly in the communist world. Well, for now, many of these places that were communist were former communists because there have been some changes over the past decade. The former Soviet Union, of course, for over 70 years, presented Darwinian evolution without any alternative. You see, this was Karl Marx's concept. There is no God. Religion is the opium of the people, he said. And so when Darwin came up with his theory, Marx was so enthusiastic, he attempted to dedicate one of his works to Charles Darwin. Well, Darwin was part of the Wedgwood family. They were capitalists. Darwin couldn't accept. But for 70 years, Darwinian evolution was advanced in Russia and other republics of the former Soviet Union. It was called scientific atheism. Here's a picture. I'm standing beside a statue of Darwin in the Moscow Darwin Museum. You see, evolution was propagated elsewhere. Albania, for example. The people there were indoctrinated. There's no God. I've been to Albania several times. On the last occasion, I spent time, actually stayed with a medical doctor. We were exactly the same age. We'd grown up through the same era. And he told me during communist times, a patient came to him and asked him a question. Doctor, do you think that evolution explains the complexity of the human body? And the doctor quietly said to the patient, he said, please don't repeat this, but he said, no, I don't. And the patient went to the government officials. He was an informant, and he said, this doctor doesn't believe in evolution. And he was tried, and he was sentenced for 2 years in jail because he was rebellious to party philosophy. In the mid-90s, I had the opportunity to travel with several others to a large symposium in Beijing where it was supposed to be open to presentations on Christianity. But when we arrived, we were interviewed by government officials. They said, who here is planning to speak on creation? Dr. John Morris and myself indicated that we were. And they said, well, you cannot speak on creation because that would be an attack against our ideology. You see, evolution is foundational to those who want to promote the atheistic, humanistic worldview. Well, here in the West, evolution has also been indoctrinated, but perhaps not with quite the zeal that there was in the former communist countries. But it's becoming that way. You see, the founding fathers of the Humanist Manifesto, John Dewey, Francis Potter, and others, they laid out the principles of their faith in Humanist Manifesto 1, the statement, the time has come for widespread recognition of the radical change in religious beliefs throughout the modern world. The time has passed for mere revision of traditional attitudes. Science and economic changes have disrupted the old beliefs. Religions the world over are under the necessity of coming to terms with the conditions created by a vastly increased knowledge and experience. In every field of human activity, the vital movement is now in the direction of candid and explicit humanism. And then they make this statement, the two foundational tenets of the religion of humanism. Number one, religious humanists regard the universe as self-existing and not create. Second, humanism believes that man is a part of nature and he's emerged as a result of a continuous process. So it's very clear. There is no God. We're here because of evolution. Here's a book entitled The Women's Encyclopedia of Myths and Secrets. I've seen it at a number of universities, a textbook for feminist classes. The author is Barbara Walker, and this is what she states. The theory of evolution showed man could not have fallen. There's no original sin and therefore no need of salvation. In 1869, a German theologian, Dr. Schoen, said, if Darwin be right in his view of the development of man out of a brutal condition, then the Bible teaching in regard to man is utterly annihilated. The American Episcopal Church said, if this hypothesis be true, then is the Bible an unbearable fiction? Then have Christians for nearly 2,000 years been duped by a monstrous lie? Darwin requires us to disbelieve the authoritative word of the Creator. And then another theological heavyweight declared, if the Darwinian theory is true, Genesis is a lie, the whole framework of the book of life falls to pieces, and the revelation of God to man, as we Christians know it, is a delusion and a snare. And then Walker continues, these gentlemen were right. The theory of evolution does indeed contradict the biblical creation myths and the dogma of the fall. So there it's very clear. Here is a person who is not a believer, who understands very much how significant creation is to Christianity. Oh, I would wish that many Christians would see this, but they don't comprehend how important creation is. In fact, many have embraced evolution. Since I have become a creationist and then a Christian, I have been following the agenda to advance evolution. I'm going to show you a few of the books that I have collected. Books like this, Scientists Confront Creationism, a series of essays edited by Lori Godfrey. Or a book entitled Fallacies of Creationism. Another, Abusing Science, the Case Against Creationism. Here's a book called Evolution and the Myth of Creationism, a basic guide to the facts in the evolution debate. Or a book by a British author, Richard Dawkins, The Blind Watchmaker, Why the Evidence of Evolution Reveals a Universe Without Design. And what do these books say? Well, pretty well the same thing. People who believe in God are narrow-minded religious bigots who are trying to push science back into the dark ages, they say. And they have all the same kinds of arguments and attempts to support evolution. Here's Science and Creationism, a view from the National Academy of Sciences. As historic representatives of the scientific profession and designated advisor to the federal government in matters of science, the Academy states unequivocally that the tenets of creation science are not supported by scientific evidence, that creationism has no place in the science curriculum at any level, and that its proposed teaching would be impossible. This is a more recent version put out by the National Academy of Sciences, teaching about evolution and the nature of science, in which they state, evolution is the central organizing principle that biologists use to understand the world. To teach biology without explaining evolution deprives students of a powerful concept that brings great order and coherence to our understanding life. Science Framework for California Public Schools, kindergarten through grade 12 states, in order to teach life science, earth science, or astronomy, evolution should be a fundamental central concept of the curriculum. Evolution, which Darwin described as descent with modification, is the central organizing principle of life science. And finally, here's a publication put out by the American Skeptics Association, authored by Michael Shermer. It's called 25 Creationist Arguments and 25 Evolutionist Answers. And the goal was to place this publication into the hands of every science teacher in North America. And there you will notice two hands holding on to a church, and the church is being stuffed into a box labeled science. Science, of course, representing evolution, the church creation. You see, this picture really describes this agenda to suppress the creation movement, to advance evolution without opposition. And by the way, this agenda is the same in the UK and other parts of the Western world. I travel a lot around the world. Wherever I go, I find that there's opposition to the creation movement. Here, for example, when I was in Northern Ireland in 2002, there was a great debate going on because there were some teachers in a school in England, Gateshead, who were presenting an alternative to evolution. Well, actually, they were simply challenging evolution. And it was in the news headlines. Last week, scientists, philosophers, and church leaders condemned Emmanuel City Technology College in Gateshead for promoting creationism. Secular campaigners called on ministers to ban teaching of creationism in the state-funded schools, warning that failure to do so would allow every crackpot religious group to start peddling their own mad fantasies in schools. The senior staff at Gateshead have delivered a series of lectures giving teachers tips on how to question the theory of evolution. Well, what's wrong with that? Isn't that what science is all about? Aren't we supposed to be able to challenge? Well, apparently not. Richard Dawkins, who wrote the book The Blind Watchmaker, he has a position at Oxford University. It's called public understanding of science. He promotes evolution wherever he can, and he was writing in the newspapers. He was quite furious by what was taking place. Richard Dawkins' subtitle of his book is Why the Evidence of Evolution Reveals a Universe Without Design. And in the Daily Telegraph, March 18th, he said there are three kinds of people when it comes to the subject of origins. He said those who believe that God created, they believe in the Bible. Secondly, he said those who believe that God used evolution, like, for example, Pope John Paul II. And then he said there are people like himself, who's an atheist, who believes in evolution. He said he's having difficulty in trying to educate the public into believing in evolution. So he said he's going to throw his support behind the Pope and others who promote the idea that God used evolution. Perhaps you've seen this. National Geographic, this past month, November 2004. Was Darwin wrong? Well, don't hold your breath. When you open it to the article, there's the answer. No. The evidence for evolution is overwhelming, they say. And they give the same arguments. Just November 11, 2004, Georgia evolution dispute embarrasses some. There, the Department of Education was going to put labels in biology textbooks that evolution was a theory. The ACLU was furious. He said, you can't do that. You're allowing Bible-believing Christians to have their way. They just simply wanted to challenge evolution. John Reeder, in his book, The Rise of Life, page 9 states, the simplest explanation attributes life on earth to the work of some supernatural force which has ordered that things be so. This explanation has the unquestioned merit of encompassing everything. There is nothing that the invocation of a supernatural force cannot explain. No question remains if God was behind it all. Belief in the omnipotent God is all that is required. You see, this man who is an evolutionist knows what the alternative is. That there's a creator. That there's been a creation. But he and others insist this concept should not be even considered. Now, we have looked at this agenda, and I have this question. What are the consequences when individuals or a society willingly chooses to ignore the evidence for creation? Well, there's a biblical answer to that question. And it's found in Romans chapter 1, beginning in the 18th verse. This is what Paul states. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men, who hold the truth in unrighteousness, because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God hath showed it unto them. For the invisible things of him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. Because that, when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the incorruptible God into an image made like to corruptible man and to birds and four-footed beasts and creeping things. What is Paul saying? It's very simple. The evidence that God has created is so obvious from the things that he has made. When you willingly choose to ignore or reject that evidence, you are without excuse. And Paul describes what man will do. He said, rather than worship God, he'll begin to worship man and birds and four-footed beasts and creeping things. Which reminds me of a statement made by Carl Sagan in his book, The Cosmic Connection. On page 7, he wrote, as co-equal recipients of this precious patrimony of 4.5 billions of years of evolution, why should the identification not apply also to other organisms on earth, which are equally the product of 4.5 billion years of evolution? We care for a small fraction of the organisms on earth, dogs, cats, and cows, for example, because they are useful or flatter us, but spiders, salamanders, salmon, and sunflowers are equally our brothers and sisters. That's exactly what Paul said will happen when you willingly choose to ignore God. Paul continues, verse 24, therefore God also gave them up to uncleanness through the lusts of their own hearts to dishonor their own bodies between themselves, who changed the truth of God into a lie and worshipped and served the creature more than the Creator, who is blessed forever. They will reject the truth, and the context here is creation. And Paul says they will accept the lie. What is the opposite of creation? Evolution. And he continues, for this cause God gave them up to vile affections, for even their women did change the natural use in that which is against nature. And likewise also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust one toward another, men with men, working that which is unseemly, and receiving in themselves the recompense of their error, which was meet. What is Paul talking about? Well, it's very simple. He says, men with men, women with women, homosexuality. And isn't it interesting that in the news currently, this is exactly what we hear. And by the way, to say anything about this publicly, that is to speak against it from the Bible, well, it could be a hate crime. That's the direction that society is headed. But Paul says this is exactly what you can expect. When you remove God from man's thinking, man begins to make his own rules. Verse 29, and even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient, being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, debate, deceit, malignity, whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, despiteful, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, without understanding, covenant breakers, without natural affection, implacable, unmerciful, who knowing the judgment of God, that they which commit such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, but have pleasure in them that do them. You see, the Bible describes a scenario of human behavior, of what takes place when man removes God from his thinking, when he rejects the evidence of creation. And when we look around us in the world today, the very things that Paul describes are the things that are happening. Time magazine, infidelity, it may be in our genes. Infidelity is the result of the evolutionary drive for humans to have as many offspring as possible with as many partners as possible, an evolutionary psychologist states. Newsweek, murder, a week in the death of America. Newsweek, America under the gun. What must be done? U.S. News, kids who kill. Newsweek, massacre in Colorado. And all these visuals are still in our minds. The things that are happening in this country. Violence goes mainstream. How could she do it? Parents killing their children. When violence hits home. Evil, what makes people go wrong? The abortion issue. And now, even pills to kill children before they're born. What's happening to our society? Well, exactly what we would expect based on the biblical view, and particularly in a period of time called the last days. Paul, writing to Timothy in 2 Timothy in chapter 3, beginning in verse 1, this know also that in the last days perilous times will come. For men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, without natural affection, truce breakers, false accusers, incontinent, fierce, despisers of those that are good, traitors, heady, high-minded, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having a form of godliness, but denying the power thereof. From such, turn away. The very language used to describe human behavior in the last days is the same terminology that Paul uses in Romans chapter 1 to say this is what will happen to people who remove God from their thinking because they've accepted a lie. You see, this book gives us insight and understanding. Not only about the past. In the past 8 sessions, that's what we've been dealing with. A biblical view of the origin and the history of life. And we could see that you could back it up and support it with the observable evidence. But it also helps us to understand what takes place today, presently, in the world, to a society that removes God from their thinking. The Bible is true. I trust that this presentation will help us to better understand the impact of evolution on our society, morally. In our next session, we are going to